Blog Talk Radio.
Like a hand for years. I'm in the living room, banging on an old up branch, where my world began, discovering the music that the child I was, before I became the man that I am.
Welcome to Allen Media Strategies Radio, or WAMS. As we like to call it. Hi there, I'm Burke Allen from Allen Media Strategies in Washington, D.C., your media and marketing experts, where we talk to authors, entertainers, information marketers, and just lots of really interesting folks with a different point of view. And today we've got an author with a very controversial point of view. His new book, called 6 Million and Counting, claims, among other things, that during World War II, the United States and its allies actually let the Holocaust happen without trying to stop it. The author and historian's name is John Egan, and we welcome John to Blog Talk Radio and WAMS Radio. Hi, John. Thanks for being on the show today.
Yeah, Berg, thanks a lot for having me on.
Well, we've got to get into this thing and dive in with both feet and talk to you about 6 Million and Counting, Darwin, Atheism, and Genocide. And you call it a crisis in America. Tell me about that. What is the crisis?
Well, I think the crisis is, for example, the country is falling apart on a lot of different levels, especially on an ethical level. It shows that polls show that quite a few people accept the notion of torturing people to get information out of them. And when I was a kid growing up, that was something the Nazis did. And now we've got the President of the United States advocating torture and people in the government actually doing it, and to me this is very, very frightening, and especially frightening that the polls show that quite a few Christian people accept this too, and this to me is very, very disturbing.
John, tell me about your background, where you're from, and what brought you to the point to write this book.
Yeah, I grew up in Levittown, Long Island, which at that time was a segregated community, and most of the kids that I grew up with were Irish or Italian or Jewish, and one time I was with a Jewish friend of mine, and he showed me a picture book of the death camps. And as I was looking at this, I remember him looking up at me, and he said, "Egan, your face has turned white." And my face had turned white. I had felt all of the blood rush out of my head as I was looking at the pictures of these atrocities, and I had never seen anything like this. And from that point on, I decided I was going to study German history and the history of the Nazis and the Nazi racial ideology, and I did that in graduate school, and that's when I began to discover the links between Darwinism and Nazi racial ideology.
Now, you said you grew up in Levittown, Long Island, which, if memory serves me correct, most of those homes were occupied by our GIs who had come back right after World War II to start the family. A lot of those homes were built by folks with the GI Bill. Is that right?
Yeah, that we were the good guys. We had won the war. We beat the bad guys. The Nazis were the bad guys. And to me, this is what's really scary about what's going on now, is because it seems to me we're doing a lot of the things that the Nazis were doing.
If you'd like to participate in the conversation today with author John Egan about his new book, 6 Million and Counting, we're taking your phone calls now at 718-506-1944. That's 718-506-1944. It's a free call if you're in the New York City metropolitan area, 718-506-1944. And, John, you went on to be a student of history and, I guess, of World War II history in large part because of where you grew up and the folks that you grew up around in your parents' generation.
That's right. I was very interested in naval history because my father was in the U.S. Navy and almost every one of the older gentlemen who lived in Levittown, Long Island, were veterans of World War II, so it was a part of my life growing up.
You mentioned that you'd you'd studied German history as well. Talk to me about what qualifies you to write a book that has these sort of historical overtones and what sort of research you went into. Then we'll get into some of the specific points in the book.
Well, I studied history at Hofstra University, and I went to graduate school there, and I also studied German language in Germany. So I'm able to look into a lot of the sources in two languages. And I've been working on this topic for quite a long time, and one of the things that changed my view on the whole thing was a historian named Lucy Davidovits, who came out in 1975, and she showed that the Nazis persisted with the Holocaust of the German Jews and Russian Jews, even though this was in conflict with the Nazi war effort against the Russians. And in fact, what I'm saying in the book is that the Holocaust caused the Germans to lose the Second World War, but they persisted in this. They persisted in this murderous process of killing Jewish women and children, even though it was in conflict with the needs of the German army at the time. And it was this illogic that made me study what were the causes of this seemingly stupid political decision by the German government.
Well, and John, you know, I'll have to tell you, a lot of people are going to look at some of the claims you make in this book. For example, that the United States let the Holocaust happen and didn't do anything to try to stop it, and they're going to say, you know, this guy is nuttier than a fruitcake.
Well, people are writing about that right after the Second World War. There's a large body of literature by people who were appalled at the fact that United States corporations were involved in the Holocaust. And since that time, there's been hundreds of books written about that by reputable scholars. What was going on was that Auschwitz was built by the German chemical firm IG Farben, and certainly Jews were sent there to be murdered, but the selection process was that those people who couldn't work were murdered immediately, while others were put to work in the German armaments industry. And these slave labor camps were all over Germany. There were over 10,000 camps in Germany. It had evolved quickly into a slave labor society, and all of these munitions and airplane parts and tank parts were built partially with slave labor, which meant that the profits were enormous.
Now, John, let's talk about, and by the way, we're talking with John Egan, the author of 6 Million and Counting, a very controversial new book. Let's talk about your allegation in the book that the United States and our allies at the time, including England, actually let the Holocaust happen. And you infer in the book that that we really wanted this to happen. We didn't do anything to try to stop it.
Yeah, 90% of German war effort went to fight the Russians. So by my way of thinking, the strategy was to allow the Germans and Russians to slaughter each other in this catastrophic race war that they were having, while the United States and Britain were content basically to bomb the Germans, and they only entered the war on the continent of Europe rather slowly and rather reluctantly later on, while the major casualties and the major war effort was taking place on the Eastern Frontier. In the meantime, all of these munitions and weapons of war were being built with slave labor, so the profits kept on rolling. German military production increased threefold, even at a time when their cities were being bombed around the clock.
John Egan is our guest. The book is 6 Million and Counting. It's available at Amazon.com and bookstores everywhere. And, you know, John, you talked about growing up in Levittown, Long Island, being shown this book about the Nazi death camps as a very young man, and certainly that's going to leave an impression on you. But you also mentioned that, you know, Levittown, this was a town built by the good guys, and America are the good guys. So what were the good guys doing here in your estimation if you say that they let this whole thing happen?
Well, certainly the fellows that I grew up with, when they served in the Second World War, they were fighting for freedom, and I think the vast majority of people were fighting for freedom, but the same type of machinery, industrial machinery that's used in war is used all the time. But in the Second World War and also what's going on now in Iraq, there's massive billions and billions of dollars being profit going into the war industries now in Iraq and Afghanistan. And the American people are informed about it in the same way, about fighting for democracy. And we're all fighting for democracy, but people are making a lot of money on it while we're fighting for it.
So would you be of the belief then that that somewhere in a dark corner during the darkest hours of World War II, Winston Churchill and FDR are huddled up saying, you know, just let the Germans kill all those Jews. What do we care? We're making money.
Well, I'm not sure that anything exactly like that happened. I think when the Germans engaged in this process for their own reasons, and we just let them do it, and it didn't serve our purposes to make any major effort to try and stop it. In the meantime, we had our own agenda, and the Nazis had their agenda, and it was allowed to fulfill itself.
John Egan's book, 6 Million and Counting, is subtitled Darwin, Atheism and Genocide, The Darwinian Crisis in America. And if you'd like to participate in the conversation with author John Egan today, our telephone number is 718-506-1944, 718-506-1944. And you can visit John online at 6millionandcounting.com. Now, John, you're of the belief that lots of horrible things that happen in today's America and today's indeed world society, as well as this atrocity that happened during World War II, is directly linked back to Charles Darwin and the theory of evolution.
Right. It didn't take long for the eugenics movement to appear. It was Darwin's cousin, Mr. Galton, who originated the eugenics movement very soon after Darwin published in 1859. And the idea behind the eugenics movement was to improve the quality of the human race. And in order to improve the quality of the human race, you had to get rid of people who were not fit for survival. And those people who were not fit for survival were deemed to be mentally deficient people, for example, people who were handicapped. American race laws and American sterilization laws included drunkards or habitual criminals. And, for example, Sweden has continued with its sterilization process right up until 1976. Up until 1976, 60,000 Swedish women were sterilized against their will because it was deemed that they were not fit to reproduce. And that's the essence of the Darwinian science, is the ability to reproduce, because those species that reproduce the most are the ones who are most fit. And so the eugenics movement decided to use the state as a vehicle for natural selection. The state would decide who would reproduce. And the Nazis took this to the extreme. They decided that in their vision of the future of humanity, the Jews would have to be exterminated. And that was the reason why they engaged in this Holocaust, even to their own detriment, because they felt that when the last Jewish family in Europe was killed, their own race would transmutate into a new species, the Übermensch.
The Übermensch. Now, John Egan, the author of 6 Million and Counting, also says in his book that not only were the Nazis, which has been widely reported, interested in creating a master race, you say that they were really, and this is hugely controversial, really trying to create this new human species that would have, I guess, zero Jewish blood in it.
Yeah, they were interested in what they called racial purification, and we still are engaged in that, not just in the United States, but in other places. They call it ethnic cleansing now, and the Germans called it racial purification, and their notion was that when the last Jewish family was killed, the German race would undergo a mystical transformation in and attain mystical superpowers. And so this explains, for example, the true death camps. There were a number of death camps that were not involved in military production, but were just there to kill Jews as quickly and as efficiently as possible. And this was at a time when the Germans were losing the war. They were suffering catastrophic military defeats against the Red Army. The Red Army was even closing in on Berlin, and they were persisting in this genocide. And the reason is they felt that this mystical transformation might still take place and turn the tide and win the war for the Germans when the whole German race was mystically transformed into the Übermensch.
If you'd like to talk with author John Egan about his book 6 Million and Counting and his allegations that Charles Darwin is behind the downfall of modern society, amongst other things, the telephone number is 718-506-1944, 718-506-1944. This is WAMS, Allen Media Strategies Radio. John, this book is really about more than just World War II history, though, and as sensationalistic as some of these claims are, and as controversial as these claims are about the Nazi death camps and the fact that the U.S. and their allies knew what was happening to the Jews in these death camps and didn't care. The book really is more globally viewed, as I read it, as a condemnation of the theory of evolution.
Yeah, the book is an historical argument, because what I'm saying is that Darwinism is wrong. And because it's wrong, we are going down a wrong path. In the United States, Darwinist education is mandated by law. Schools have to teach it. They're even teaching it to 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old kids in elementary school. And because our university education and our high school education and the general acceptance on television and media about the truth of Darwinism as a science has led us as a culture to believe that life is inherently a brutal, remorseless, vicious struggle for existence, where only those who are most brutal will survive and propagate the race and the society. And this is absolutely contrary to the teachings of Christianity. And this is why Darwinism and Christianity are polar opposites. And people in the United States, especially Christians who accept Darwinism, need to understand this, that Darwinism is anathema to Christianity, and that the plans of the ultra-Darwinists, which are the latest of their group, are committed to establishing an atheistic society in the United States and in the world.
So your allegation then, and I know from reading through your materials you have some education background, your thought is Darwinism, even the theory of it, the theory shouldn't even be taught in public schools.
Well, I think it's not right exactly to say that. I think alternatives should be allowed to be taught in the public school. And the way the laws work now is only Darwinism can be taught.
So you're saying if you can talk about Adam and Eve, then it's okay to talk about the slime crawling from the sea and magically transforming into man.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the one idea is as good as the other. For example, the notion of Genesis, humans evolved from a higher form. We have evolved from God. And the Darwinist notion is that we have evolved from lower forms. It's a different idea, but both are equally valid, and especially if you look into, for example, the notion of the anthropomorphic universe, which was presented by some of the leading physicists in the world at the time. They have shown that the universe seems to be specifically designed to allow for human life. It's not a chance event. Things are not happening accidentally in the universe.
John Egan is the author of the brand new book, 6 Million and Counting, available at Amazon.com or wherever books are sold, and you can also pick it up on our Blog Talk Radio WAMS homepage. There's an easy link to get the book, 6 Million and Counting, and you can also visit John online at his website, 6millionandcounting.com. We still have a few minutes if you'd like to call in and air your opinions and mix it up a little with our guest, John Egan. Phone number to call is 718 786-1944. Free call in the New York City metropolitan area, 718-506-1944. So, John, would you say then that most Americans are sort of divided into these two camps, the folks who really buy into Darwin and the theory of evolution, and then the folks that really accept the way it's written in the Bible?
Well, I asked somebody the other day what they thought the percentages were, and this fellow was from Texas, and he thought that 90% of the people in America believe Darwinism. And if you watch TV and read the newspapers, you tend to think that too. But actually, polls show that only about 12% of the population believe Darwinism for what it is, as an atheistic interpretation of the universe, that humans have evolved without any spiritual import from any spirit bodies, including God. And more than 85% of the people believe in some sort of theistic interpretation of the universe. So there's a very, very small minority of people in the United States who believe this.
Okay, so isn't it really, though, John, an awfully big leap to say that this theory that Charles Darwin came up with some, 100-plus years ago is behind all of the death, destruction, and corruption in America today? Isn't that quite a leap?
Yeah, sure. It's not the only reason why things are falling apart, but people need to begin somewhere to try to straighten things out, and I think my book and what I'm saying and what other people are saying is that if we start to get a realistic interpretation of life and how life works, things can get better, because the universe might not be a cold, brutal environment. It might not be some accidental event where our lives have no lasting meaning or purpose, that perhaps there is some greater thing that's going on in the world today, and we need to be able to talk about that freely in the schools and in the universities and in the media so that we can possibly change the direction that we seem to be going in, because right now it doesn't look good.
Not a positive outlook from you on the way things are headed, huh? Well,
no,
let's...
Burke, I think that if anyone thinks that everything is working perfectly fine in the United States today, they really don't want to take a look at my book. But if anybody thinks that they've got a problem with the way things are going in the United States, that they don't like the way the educational system is working in the United States, then what my book can do is give you some information on how to deal with that.
John, the presidential elections are upon us in November, and recently both Barack Obama and John McCain sat down with Pastor Rick Warren at Saddleback Church out in California, where you are, and Rick Warren asked both these guys about their own personal spirituality, and I'd like to get your take and your opinion as you watch these events unfold as to which of our two presidential candidates is more likely to lean things sort of in your direction, which is away from the theory of evolution being taught in schools.
I'm not prepared to answer a question like that, except I would say that while I don't particularly agree with President Bush on much of anything, I would say that the court that he has appointed would at least possibly give some credence toward offering some hope in getting alternative discussions into the schools, where breaking down this legal system which prevents any other discussion aside from Darwinism taking place in the public schools.
Well, the popular opinion is there are going to be at least a couple of Supreme Court justice nominees sometime in the next 4 to 6 years. So it's pretty crucial, I think, as to how this presidential election shakes out. So you can't offer an opinion on which of these two guys might fall on your side, huh?
I'd be afraid to do that.
Well, there's no crystal ball out there, and no one can read the future. And by the same token, John, listen, you weren't there, millions of years ago when whichever of these things happened, God put Adam and Eve in the garden, or like the little protoplasmic slime crawled out of the ocean and suddenly became man. So, you know, who are you to make this pronouncement to everybody else and say, this is the way it ought to be?
Okay, well, there's other alternatives beside those two you just presented, Berg. And what I do in the book is I show that there is a large body of scientific evidence presented by some of the greatest scientists and physicists and biologists in the history of science who also don't agree with Darwinist thought. I mean, I'm not making this up on my own. All throughout the book are quotes from famous scientists, great scientists, some of the greatest zoologists and biologists who have ever lived, who say that Darwinist science is a pseudoscience. It's a false interpretation of history and the history of life. So it's important to remember, Berg, I'm not making it up. I've got a lot of sources cited in my book which show that these questions that I'm raising are questions that are raised by some of the greatest thinkers in the history of the world.
This is not a take it out to the beach on a Sunday afternoon kind of read. This is one that makes you think, huh?
I think it's an easy read. It's only like 165 pages, so anybody who's interested in these topics can go through that and read it easily. I don't use a lot of jargon, and when I'm forced to use any kind of jargon, I explain what it is. I think it's not something that even someone with a fifth or sixth grade education could read, and certainly anybody with a high school education could read my book and enjoy it, and be able to go into a school board meeting armed with some information about why Darwinism is a problem, because I think people are often intimidated by the bluster of the Darwinist establishment telling them that all of their ideas about spirituality and the nature of God are irrelevant. And I don't think that that's true, but we need to be able to deal with this Darwinists because they're in control right now.
If there were one thing you'd like for folks to take away from this book when they read it, what would that be, John?
That there's more to life than just electrons and physical particles banging into each other in the course of an unintelligent, randomly placed universe that has no lasting value or meaning to anyone's life. That life has meaning and it's important, and all of our lives are very, very important and have a meaning beyond materialism.
And what are the things that you see in your everyday world that make you a believer that there's more to it than just that?
I think everything that I see. I think when I go through life, I know my life, I've gotten to where I've gotten on the basis of cooperation with people, on the basis of being kind to people. And I think for most people, that's the way it is. Life is not a brutal, violent, remorseless struggle for existence. It's a nurturing, kindly universe that nurtures us and protects us every day. And if we begin to see the universe in that way, our whole perspective on life can change.
You know, John, I have a 3.5-year-old son, and just yesterday he grabbed me by the hand and he said, "Daddy, look, our flower is growing." And it's things like that, the smile of a child, a flower coming from the earth, a beautiful sunset here in the Washington, D.C. metro that make me say that maybe there's a little bit more to things than just electrons banging into each other, as you say.
That's what I'm trying to say, yes.
John Egan is the author of the new book, 6 Million and Counting, subtitled Darwin, Atheism and Genocide, The Darwinian Crisis in America. And it's available now at Amazon.com, right here on our WAMS Blog Talk Radio webpage. And you can also visit John's website and pick the book up there at 6millionandcounting.com. That's 6millionandcounting.com. John Egan, thanks for being on our radio program today.
Thank you very much, Burke.
I'm Burke Allen for Allen Media Strategies in Washington, D.C. More exciting and interesting guests coming soon on WAMS Radio, on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
in my world again, discovering the music that the child I was before I became the man that I am. Nothing much ever changes here.